Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Excellent. I'm really excited. So welcome to the show, everyone. Today we're joined by Melissa Snover. Melissa is CEO and founder of Get Nourished. Now, first of all, welcome to the show, Melissa. I can't believe, like I said earlier, you've managed to find an hour out of your day to do this. So yeah, thank you for taking the time to come on the show.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Pleasure on my side as well. So let's get into the conversation then. So I really want to find a little bit of background on yourself and kind of your journey to becoming CEO and founder of Get Nourished. If you can give us a bit of background on that.
Sure, absolutely. So I started my first company when I was 23. I actually came to the United Kingdom from America to do my master's at Lancaster Business School. And as part of my program there, I started a company and it ended up doing well. So I actually ended up running it. And that was a financial business, which was literally set up in specifics to the project that I had to do as part of my dissertation. And actually that business went on to do very well for quite some time. But I didn't really love it. You know, I hadn't set it up as a passion project. It was something that I kind of almost fell into. But it did teach me a lot about kind of setting up a business, disrupting industries, not accepting status quo. And so when I had the opportunity to sell it, I really jumped at the chance to do so because I had so many other ideas at that stage. I was kind of bursting at the seams. Yeah. And so in 2010, I started my first FMCG business, which was really, again, something that I had a humongous amount of desire for myself, but that I felt that there was a bigger market for. And of course, as any good entrepreneur will tell you, you've got to do your research. And this was the very first vegan allergen-free gummy candy range, because I was a vegetarian who doesn't like chocolate, and I couldn't find any gummies that were vegetarian that didn't taste like wax. And so I started making that in my kitchen and experimented with loads of different gelling technology and hydrocolloid technology. I ended up developing a range using alginates, so seaweed, in order to make a really bouncy gummy without gelatin.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a massive learning curve. Certainly, I had no idea about any of the other parts that I was going to have to do at that stage. I just knew I wanted to make something that I would like. Luckily, there was a lot of other people that wanted it as well. But yeah, I went into that with a certain amount of money that I thought was going to be plenty, and I was so wrong. Mm. But at the same time, because I didn't have any money left over after I made the recipes, I ended up having to do things like develop a brand, develop packaging, learn packaging regulations, learn how to negotiate contract packers and manufacturers.
Wow.
And to learn how to negotiate retail listings with, you know, big multiple chains. I even did my own packing of my own Amazon parcels and my own social media. And, you know, that level of learning, although it was a lot. At the time, I felt like I was on the edge of a nervous breakdown for quite many years. But actually, it gave me the education I needed really to do everything that I've done since. Now, when I did that brand, I grew that company to 40,000 stores in under 3 years.
Wow.
Making it one of the fastest growing brands in certainly in confectionery, but even in snacking overall globally. And so again, somebody came forward, multiple people actually, wanting to buy that brand. And when I got the chance to sell it, I jumped at it because I knew that I had kind of exhausted the available options and growth that I could do on my own. And I knew it needed more support from a distribution point of view and more people and so on and so forth. So I sold that company to Cloetta PLC in 2014. And then I did my transition with Cloetta and started in 2015 in the world of 3D printing. And really, like a lot of people are like, why 3D printing? Well, I had no idea that it was going to be 3D printing at that stage. I actually was trying to create a solution for basically a reaction to every single frustration that I had when I had developed Goody Good Stuff. Mm. And this was primarily around the limitations of mainstream manufacturing. And this is not just in food, this is in any kind of mass produced product, which is, you know, you have to make hundreds of thousands of the same thing in order to get your price point to a reasonable, you know, approachable point for the mainstream market. NPD, so new product development, takes around 2 years in a traditional manufacturing model. And this bothered me massively that I couldn't make enough varieties to be able to please all the people all the time. And so when I started in the world of 3D printing, I didn't even know it would be a 3D printer. I just knew that I wanted to find a way to put the creation of the product into the hands of the consumer. And, you know, taking into account, you can never make enough varieties to please everyone, because how can you possibly know what everybody wants? Never mind the fact that you could never merchandise it anyway, even if you could do that. The only way to do that was to allow the consumer to make their own product. So I started thinking about ways that I could do that. And I landed on this idea of creating a device that you could put inside, you know, retail locations, but also have a website application where people could basically choose from a huge variety of different variable inputs around, you know, like shape. Do you want to write words? Do you want to draw a picture? Do you want to turn a photo into a candy? Do you want a 3D frog? Like, what do you want? And then, you know, what color do you want? What flavor do you want? Do you want it to be fizzy? Do you want it to be sour? You know, all of these different variables. And then this machine, which ended up being a 3D printer, could make anything that you put into it in around 5 minutes, in effect, creating a limitless number of outputs. And wow. So, yeah, that's when I started working on the concept called the Magic Candy Factory. And that took me about 6 months to develop from scratch. Again, I knew nothing about 3D printing. Yeah. I had to buy 3D printers online, take them apart, put them back together. I read every single book on 3D printing I could find. Learned G coding and toolpath overriding software linking, and launched that concept to market. Yeah, at the beginning of 2016. So that was the beginning of 3D printing. And that concept went all over the world, and it's still available all over the world. You can still find it, but it was making confectionery. And although that's an amazing leap forward for technology overall, it wasn't having the really meaningful impact I knew the technology had the opportunity to make if it was applied in the right way. And so in 2018, I think it was in November, I sat down with my core team and I said, you know, I think we have done a great job, but I think we haven't found the perfect value add market fit for this technology. And I think I know what it is. And I think it is to personalize health and wellness, which should be the first thing that we personalize, but actually currently is not being personalized at all. And so that's where the vision for the Get Nourished brand came from. And actually the wider business, which is called Remedy Health, basically was formed in May of 2019 with a vision that that's what we would do for the rest of our time.
What an amazing story that is.
Yeah, you probably got more than you asked for there.
It's fascinating. It should be turned into some kind of like Amazon Prime series or something. I don't know.
That's, yeah, who knows? Maybe one day.
Yeah. Well, we'll definitely get more into the business in a little bit. But, you know, I'd love to talk about Dragon's Den. So you had an appearance on Dragon's Den not so long ago, and I just want to find out a little bit about what that experience was like, because, you know, I sit on my sofa at home and watch Dragon's Den on a Sunday evening or whenever it's on, and I think, oh my god, I would never be able to do that. It looks terrifying. So it really does. So what was that experience like, if you don't mind just talking a little bit about this?
Sure. So I actually filmed that in 2017. So it seems a lifetime ago, but they didn't show it until like the middle of 2018. I feel like that is the case. I might get my years wrong right now, but it was a very long time ago. And there was a massive gap in between when they filmed it and when they showed it on television, which made it quite challenging for me, because you have to live with the knowledge that it's coming at some point. You're like, oh God, here you go. Yeah, I was relieved when it finally aired, because I was like, just get it out of the way. But at the end of the day, when I went on that show, we were approached to go on the show. So we did not apply. Like, they came looking for us. When we went on that show, you have to go through a DD process to go on there, which may, a lot of people don't really know about, which is more rigorous than the DD process I went through when selling my company to a PLC.
Wow.
They look at all of your accounts. They check all of your IP. They read every contract that you have. They read your articles, your shareholder agreements. They have absolute carte blanche knowledge of everything around you. And so as if you've watched my episode, the big issue everyone had was with the ownership structure of my business at the time, which was Magic Candy Factory, not Remedy Health, which right. I have today. And that is very fair and fine. But the fact of the matter is that they knew about that before we went on, and they made it seem like it would be okay. And obviously that was they also, I guess, are responsible for making good TV to a degree, but that's not how they play it, I guess, would be my view. Mm. Now, when you go in there, they also don't show you that you have to sit in a waiting room for, like, I think I waited for 6 hours in a waiting room before I was able to go on.
Oh my God.
And they leave you in that elevator for, I don't know, over 20 minutes on your own.
Really?
While you're waiting to go on. So like, obviously this is to build up the chances of good TV happening, I'm sure. Yeah. And that might not happen to everyone, but that definitely happened to me. And then I guess the last thing I would say is that the actual episode that the segment that I was part of lasted over an hour, and they cut it down to what was 7 minutes, I believe.
Really? Wow.
And so a lot of the things that happened, you didn't see, which will never be ever shown, which is something you have to accept. So if I was going to give advice to another entrepreneur looking at going on that show, it certainly can be a massive boost for a business that needs to get brand awareness. And certainly millions of people watch it, not just on the first go, but I think my YouTube segment has like 4 million views.
Really? Wow.
So it continues and continues and continues. So it's not just one. So it is super powerful, and you can't take that away from it. It is absolutely a massive place in a pulpit to be able to showcase your brand. But I would be hesitant to say to people that it is a carte blanche good idea, because the preparation and the DD process and everything that you go through in the lead up to it is a humongous time commitment. And you just need to be aware that at the end of the day, that show is set up to get views and not to support you as an entrepreneur. So just keep it in mind when you go on.
Yeah. It's really interesting to kind of hear what it's like behind the velvet curtain of that show. I've always wondered what actually goes on. So it's really interesting to hear that. It is. But regardless of, Dragon's Den, you've raised funds really successfully during seed and Series A rounds. And I'm interested to find out how you went about that and how that was so successful.
Absolutely. So yeah, like when I was on Dragon's Den, I had a totally different company. So when I set up Remedy, we set up a totally new business, of which I am the majority shareholder by some margin. And basically when I went out to raise my seed round, I went out to raise that round in a very traditional seed round way, which would never have been something that Magic Candy Factory ever needed, because we had a great JV partner. That's one of the reasons why you do a JV. When I set that up, I went out to market and I raised money based on basic seed rounds are really hard. And I think I would make that really clear to anybody looking at raising. The seed round is the hardest round. The Series A is the second hardest round, and they get less and less hard as you get bigger, more established, and as more and more people become invested in your success. Right. So in the seed round, just to kind of bring a kind of analogy to it, it's like going in front of someone with nothing and saying, I need you to give me 2 million pounds and I have nothing to show you to de-risk your investment other than my experience, the level of the team that I built, and the value of my idea and the potential market opportunity. So this is highly risky. It's also where people get the biggest return if they come in that early. And there's a reason, risk and reward off, this is not news to anyone, but it is a big ask to get people to give you money on an idea, right? So you have to really, really win people to your idea, and you have to really make sure that they feel confidence in your ability to execute on that idea. And whether that's your background and your experience and the proof you have from your past, or whether that's an extremely good plan that you can demonstrate, you understand extremely acutely. Either way, you've got to be able to do that. Or people, just think about it the other way around. Would you give someone your money if you didn't really believe they had a chance of executing? So of course you wouldn't. So I think you have to be fair at that stage, and you have to plan for enough time, because that round often takes the longest. In your Series A, it's a little different because you've now got some traction, hopefully. And hopefully you have positive traction. And when I say positive traction, do not worry if you're not profitable. No one is profitable at their Series A. But what you do need to be able to show is, at my seed round, I said I was going to take that money and do this, and I did that.
Yeah.
And now this is the result. And then this is what I want to do next. And this is why I need the money. And so it becomes a little bit easier, although you move into a different realm of investor at that stage. And so, you know, our last round, I think our company valuation was $77 million.
Wow.
Funnily, I think when I did the Dragon's Den, the company valuation was like $8 million. So yeah. So wow. It's different now.
Yeah. Very, very different. Yeah.
Very different. So anyway, it's also a different company, but the principle is, you know, there's a massive thing in the idea that we had, and we have executed it. Now, when you go to that level and you raise that much more money, so we raised 8 million pounds, which is like 11 million US dollars.
Yeah.
You know, you're no longer looking at angels, you're looking at VCs. And so the level of DD you go through is bigger, it's more rigorous. There's a lot more questions. You often have third parties like big, you know, accountancy firms and legal consultants questioning your business model. So you just need to be ready for that. It's not very nice. It's not an enjoyable process, that part about it, but you have to be ready for it, and you have to not take it personally, and you have to be ready. And you have to also be aware that investment is a two-way relationship. You're offering an opportunity for these people to come in with an investment in your business that could potentially make them a ton of money.
Yeah.
And they're offering you money that you need. But a lot of young entrepreneurs fall into this trap that it's a one-way question style interview process. And that is absolutely not the case. You should question your potential investors. You should be talking to other people that they've invested in. You should be really assessing on a daily basis whether you want to work with them for 5 years, because it's not a short relationship. And if you bring people into your circle and your syndicate that you don't like and that you don't want to work with, you are going to make your life very difficult, and you'll have no one to blame but yourself. So you need to really take it seriously. In my experience, if you turn it around and you ask questions to them, and you ask for referrals, and you ask for references, that is what they expect, firstly. And secondly, it makes them respect you because you are taking it extremely seriously, as opposed to just being handed what you can get. And I think that's really important that people bear that in mind.
Yeah, well, it's incredible advice, Melissa. And also, I'd like to ask about, you know, when you start a business, and I want to talk about those first hires in the business, because they are crucial. You have to get those first hires and that first, you know, circle of people around you exactly right, really, to build the foundations of the business. How do you find those hires? Are they people that are on your radar already? Are those people that you already know? I'm not sure. I mean, I imagine that you wouldn't put job adverts out for those first hires, or do you? How did it work for you?
I mean, it depends. It depends on every single circumstance and business situation is going to be really different. Mm. And for me, I brought my core leadership team from my previous company with me because they were 100% with me. We worked extremely closely together. They're still with me now. A lot of the people I have working in Remedy, even though Remedy is like only 2 years old, have been working with me for 6 years. And we have an extremely strong understanding of each other, of each other's skill sets, of how we work best together. I can trust each and every one of them to the death, really. And I also know that they are 100% aligned with me in the goal and vision that we have for our business and what we want to achieve. And I think that's something that is very difficult to find just on day one from the open market.
Yeah.
Right? That's very challenging. So I would say to people looking to hire people to come into their business to be looking at their network for referrals and recommendations. But there will be special skills that you do need to hire in a traditional way. So, you know, we use workinastartup.com. I can't recommend it more. It's free. It's very effective, especially at that early stage. You get amazing people who want to work in a startup. Okay. So this is something that you often have a challenge with is you go on Indeed, you do get some people who want to work in a startup. You get some people who really don't, who want to have a more traditional corporate style setting, and you're not going to be able to offer that in a startup. So you should really try and whittle that kind of set of people down as fast as you can to get people who want to work go the extra mile and are willing to commit and put in time at that beginning stage to have a huge upside at the end. There are certain characters and spirits that really appeals to, and there are other people that it doesn't, and that's fine, but it is what it is. And you need to try and make sure that you find people that want to work in a startup setting. So I think, you know, I had at the beginning of Remedy, I think we had 4 people plus me. We call them the originals now in the business. And then we literally went out to hire every other new role that we didn't have based on a humongous amount of planning and assessment around the business. And we did extremely well. We brought in fantastic people. We've now hired almost 100 people in under 2 years. Wow. We have a very high retention rate. I think in commercial, it's like 90%.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. And I think, and that has been on the back of a very well thought out and very, very clear set of values, morals, and a culture that continually expands, but doesn't change who it is, I guess, is the point, right? Your culture in your business is its personality. And although you as an individual will change throughout your life, your core morals and values, your character should, in principle, if it is good, remain the same.
Yeah, incredible. So you mentioned you've gone from 4 employees to 100 in the past 2 years. So yeah. I imagine a huge chunk of that past 2 years has been in the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, the pandemic has affected businesses in so many different ways. And, you know, to employ that many people during the pandemic is incredible. So how did you do that? How did you onboard during the pandemic?
Yeah, it's tricky. I have to be honest with you, it's tricky, but we have kind of two kinds of different ways that we do it. Now, some of our business is based on site regardless of the pandemic because we are a food manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
So we got, you know, key business status. We can stay open during the pandemic, even when there was those really kind of confusing times, like can you not, we were making food and we were making health products and we were allowed to stay open. So, you know, that's probably about half of the entire business is on site on a daily basis. Right. And that's new product development, technology, research and development, production, operations. Those people are on site every day. And so am I. And then you have the other part of the business, which is the commercial operations, which is everything around, you know, the finance team, the marketing team, the design team, the CRM, communications, social, comms, PR. And they now are doing a hybrid model. They come in, you know, a couple of days a week and the rest of the time they're working from home. But that's more difficult to onboard somebody who's not coming in. But I mean, I onboarded my CFO with 1 day together in the office and then not again seeing him face to face for, I think, 6 months.
Wow.
And we did that through very good communication. So every Monday, I have a Monday alignment with my entire company. And then I have team meetings with my key decision makers through the business throughout the week. Then we have a manager's meeting. Then we have a Friday roundup. So people are constantly kept in the loop about what's going on. And they constantly hear the overarching vision, messages, strategy over and over and over again. And they get support at every step from their direct report, from the HR team, from me, which I think has proven to be a really good model. And it's worked quite well.
Amazing. It seems like, you know, in business at any level, communication is the most important aspect for a business to run smoothly. And communication, obviously, as teams are separated, becomes really, really, well, becomes a little bit more difficult. Obviously, we've got, you know, smoother communication now with like Slack and, you know, Zoom and things like that. How has the culture, sorry, been affected by the pandemic? How do you still instill that culture threaded throughout the business when teams are kind of separated?
It is hard. You have to, it just takes a lot more work from the management team to ensure that people are kept in the loop. So if we were all in the same room together, I wouldn't need to do that level of updating people, you know, like that, because we would all be together and every morning we'd come in and be like, oh, check this out, blah, blah, blah. Did you see this? And there would be a lot of discussion happening every minute in the office. When that's not possible, the management team and specifically the leadership need to make sure that they are keeping everybody in the loop, making sure everybody is aligned, using OKRs or KP. You can use whatever you want. OKRs are the most popular ones everybody talks about, but you can use anything you want. And then you have to repeat it again and again and again. And you need to congratulate and shout out people who are doing a great job. And you need to support people who seem to be struggling. And you just need to keep doing that over and over and over again until it sticks. And not everybody will stick. It's totally ridiculous to think you can have 100% retention. It's not possible. Most businesses growing at our speed have less than 50%. So I think what we've achieved is very good. But I think at the same time, you have to also be willing at some stage to realize if something's not working and to remedy that immediately and not to let it carry on.
Yeah.
Because that's worse, is to let it carry on. So I think that's something that I, as a CEO, you know, have to make decisions on regularly. And I think when I was younger, I probably struggled with that more because I felt very personal about it and I felt very disappointed. And, you know, I think a good manager should first always question themselves. Did I do something that didn't give this person every chance of success? And that's a good first step. But if you can answer that, no, I did not, I did everything. I feel confident that I did everything. Then you have to be willing to, you know, cut that person loose so that they can find a job that's better for them and you can find the right support for your company. Because if you allow people like that to stay in your business, everyone around them will see that they're allowed to stay despite the fact that they're not committing at the same level as the rest of the team. And that sends the wrong message for the rest of your entire business. And that can create a very, very toxic and fast spreading environment, which can be a giant killer. You need to be careful.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we can't go through this podcast without mentioning you were recently awarded Scale Up of the Year at the Birmingham Tech Awards. Was it just last Friday that happened?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, congratulations, first of all.
Thank you.
That must have been pretty incredible. And what does that mean for the business then?
It's really lovely when we get recognition for the company and for the team's hard work. And I think that award is 100% for the team and everything that they've done to achieve the growth that they have, to achieve the crazy amount of success and growth that we did in such a short period of time and such a challenging period of time, yeah. To be fair. Brexit and the pandemic both all at once. It was tricky, really. And so, yeah, I think for me, it means a lot for them to be able to be recognized as Scale Up of the Year. We've gotten a lot of awards for Startup of the Year, which is fantastic. But to be moved up to the next stage, I think, is a testament to what we have created and where we are today in our business's life and also the hard work of the team, which is absolutely paramount.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what's the future of the business then? Where can we see this business in, you know, 6 months' time, a year's time, 2 years' time? What have you got planned for that?
Yeah, so we're like always in beta. So we're always, always, always changing and evolving in order to continuously adapt and optimize so that we can always be the best business to support both our consumers and our team with the right tools to become the best versions of themselves, right? So yeah. We are not married to who we are today. We are very, very excited and we embrace change excitedly. And so, you know, today we are doing Nourish Core and Nourish Kids. And they are doing extremely well. And they're in the US and the UK. By the end of this year, we're going to launch Nourish Protein, the world's first personalized protein bar alongside those products. It's going to be amazing. I'm so excited to launch it because I want it myself. And I'm so excited. I'm so excited. And then in the new year, we're going to be looking at personalized pet products. We're also looking, we've also been developing in the background our concept Scripted, which is personalized medicine and the use of 3D printers in clinical trial processes. Wow. To bring out better recommendations for end patient providers around dosages, around different user groups. Yeah, we've got lots to go at really still, and we're not going to really stop. We're also building our third factory right now, which we hope to have open by the beginning of quarter one. And that will be about 6 times bigger than the 2 factories we have today again, and we're keeping the other ones. So that will be huge, the magnitude at which we'll be able to increase capacity and also speed up our new product development will be huge.
Incredible. You're doing some amazing work. You really are. But before we go, Melissa, I've got a little bit of a wordplay game here that I've just invented pretty much.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm a guinea pig now is what you're telling me. I'm your guinea pig.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. Good. Go. And you've got no choice either because it's my show and we'll do it. I like.
Okay. Great.
Yeah. So this could go anywhere really, but, I've jotted down a few words that of stuff we've spoken about, and if we could get your immediate thoughts on those words, just briefly.
So you just want me to give you like one sentence about them, or like
up to you. Sentence, a concise sentence, if you can.
Okay, no problem. Go.
This is not a psychological test, so don't worry.
Clear.
Okay. Okay. First words or word, Dragon's Den.
Learning experience.
Very good. You're a natural at this game, Melissa. I can see you're going to win. Second one, funding.
Fuel for growth and an opportunity to find additional people to help you on your way.
Brilliant. And the last one is leadership.
I think being a good leader for my team and for my business is the greatest honor of my life and the responsibility which I take the most seriously and that I think the most about to ensure I'm always improving to be the best that I can be.
You're really good at this. Okay. I've got one. I'll add one more in there just to round things off. Get nourished.
The world's first personalized gummy vitamin.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. Well, I can't keep you here too much longer, Melissa. Like I mentioned, you're obviously very, very busy. But I really do appreciate you taking the time to come on the show and sit with me for half an hour. And keep up the amazing work you're doing. It'll be really interesting to follow the business and see what's going on in months and years to come.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It was a pleasure speaking to you. And I'm really glad that it was helpful.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.